Welcome to the Michaela Peterson Podcast. This is episode 15. For today's episode, I spoke with Isaac Butterfield. Isaac is an Australian comedian and YouTuber. He had me on his podcast about 2 months ago, and it was great to chat with him then. I love talking to comedians, given how rough life has been for everyone, right? Comedians are great. By the way, speaking of rough life, we've all recovered from COVID and are fine now, just so everyone's aware of that. Anyway, I invited Isaac on my podcast because he's recently had a video go viral that makes light of the Christchurch massacre. The massacre was an absolutely brutal event where a white supremacist murdered 51 people in a mosque in Christchurch, New Zealand in March 2019. I truly believe that one of the only ways to survive the horrors and tragedy of life and stay sane are to joke about them, other than the carnivore diet. No, but seriously, if you joke about terrible events, it almost takes the strength away from them. His joke was dark, though. You'll hear it in this podcast. We talk about the backlash he's faced from the joke and spoke about how to deal with tragedy in an honest way. He's had a terrible form of epilepsy that's caused him incredible suffering, so he's no stranger to the horrors life can bring. We spoke about what jokes are off limits, if any, and the proper way to deal with PC culture. At the end of the podcast, after we stopped recording, he said, "I'm just a guy who rescues greyhounds." So if you haven't been introduced, welcome to Isaac Butterfield, also known as the Buttsmarn, just a man who rescues greyhounds. Field, welcome to my podcast.
It's fantastic to be here, Michaela. I am pumped. I know you're gravely ill, but it's nice to be here.
I'm not gravely ill. It's the tail end.
I'm you're the first person I've spoken to with coronavirus. I'm feeling ill just speaking to you. Coming through the screen. Where's my mask? This is ghastly.
It wasn't ideal because, well, first of all, because it's coronavirus, but second of all, because I put up a YouTube video like 3 months ago complaining about the quarantine.
Well, it's broken the banks of quarantine here in Australia. Like, I know in the States and in England at the moment, it's breaking everywhere. But in Australia, we've been pretty lucky. New Zealand claims that they haven't had any cases, but in Victoria and Australia, it's going everywhere. I'm in New South Wales, which is sort of north of Victoria, but it's coming for us. We're all going to get caught up in it, I guess, and hopefully we don't cark it from it. That's my hope.
Yeah. Mine wasn't that bad. It went rampant in Belgrade, so we got here and they're like, there are no cases. That's what they said. There are no cases, which obviously wasn't true, but there are no cases, and so they opened everything up completely. And then about 4 weeks later after the elections, they're like, oh, just kidding. There's this huge spike.
Which is the best way to deal with it.
Yeah. So then we quarantined because I wasn't that concerned about whether or not I was going to get it. But my dad had pneumonia earlier this year. I was like, okay. So we hunkered down in quarantine, like hardcore quarantined. And 10 days into the quarantine, we all got it. So I guess we were quarantining with dad at the clinic. So I don't know if somebody brought it in or if one of us got it and then didn't show symptoms for about 10 days. But
how easy is it to get it anyway? Yeah, no, you're right. It must be so easy. I mean, how do you catch the flu? You never see it coming, asymptomatic, et cetera, et cetera. Who knows?
Yeah. And everybody got it. Like everyone I know here that got it. To really varying degrees, like no symptoms to being quite ill. So anyway,
wow.
Now hopefully I'm immune.
And how's your old man dealing with it? I know, as you said, he had pneumonia earlier.
Yeah, he had pneumonia in January. So he got symptoms. He got like a mild fever and they did a CT scan and they're like, it's in his lungs. We need to just bombard him with everything we have so that he doesn't get one of those cytokine storms. So he got put on like 4 or 5 serious medications. And I think he reacted worse to the medications than he did to the virus. But who knows? Maybe it was going to be deadly. I don't know. But his symptoms at the beginning were, it was like mild fever and nausea. It was like what kind of what everybody had. And then he just got bombarded with like steroids and antivirals and antibiotics. And it was just like, that did not make him feel very good. So he's okay now, like from coronavirus, but the medications are pretty rough.
I bet. I was having this conversation in my own mind today, which is always a sign of someone's losing it. But I was having this conversation. I was thinking, you know, they always talk about the microflora or the flora on your skin. I wonder what will happen to the flora, you know, the microbes, the germs, everything that lives on your skin from all the hand sanitizing, from all the changes in the environment. It's not being, you know, for everything being sanitized, it's not being shown or given the opportunity to have other interactions with other germs and whatnot. Like, I wonder if that will have an impact on how we react to certain diseases or infectious diseases, in fact, moving forward. I know none of us have the answer, but I just, it's freaking me out.
It can't be good, right? They know people who are in sterile environments are more likely to catch things in the future. And the amount of hand sanitizer people are using, like they've done blood tests, it's getting into people's blood. Like,
ooh.
It's not. Just there's just so many things we're not thinking about, which is why I put up that video before complaining about the quarantine. And I'm still anti-quarantine, even after the virus. But anyway, moving away from coronavirus, I'm going to survive, I promise. And so is my dad. I wanted to start. Well, can you introduce yourself to my audience just in case anyone listening doesn't know who you are?
Okay, well, I'm an Australian comedian. I'm an Australian YouTuber as well. And I've been on the comedy scene in Australia probably for about 6 to 7 years now, doing open mic shows for a long time, and then moving on to doing, you know, book shows. And then I decided that the best way to sort of gain more traction in the comedy world, and, you know, my comedy really wasn't seen as something that you could do in Australia. To become successful in Australia in the comedy scene, you have to play a certain role, and that role is the family-friendly comic. You have to be able to be put on TV at a certain time of a night, and that's usually about 8:30, you know, so you have to really play along those lines. And that's just not me. That's just not something that I enjoy. I've tried to write clean material. It's horrible. It's gross. I don't enjoy it. But the best way to really grow as not even just a comic, but anyone, and I mean, you've seen the exact same thing, is through social media, is through an online presence. And that's what I started doing. I started making videos, and I really structured it like a business. I focused on my area around me, my hometown of Newcastle in New South Wales in Australia. I started making videos, making jokes about that area. And then I grew to my home state, and then I grew to the home country, and then basically branched out all over the world. So in about a year, it took me about a year to get to 100,000 subscribers. And now I'm sitting at, not that I'm counting, of course, but 1.49 million. So, you know, no, it's going very well. And I was lucky enough to do my my first Australian tour, and then followed it up the year after with a world tour. And last year knocked over about 96 shows in a year, and in 6 different countries. And I've come out with 2 comedy specials now. One is on Amazon, and one is just been released on my website, Antihero. And I'm just having fun. I'm just making content about everything from feminism to diet to cancel culture to transgender people, to everything. So I like to cover all the different bases, and my YouTube channel is somewhere where I just I come up with ideas and I put them out there, and hopefully people enjoy them. And I have a beard. Michaela, and I have a beard, so yeah, don't forget that.
I can see. What do you look like under the beard?
There's not much going on. I've never really shown it off. I've been with my partner for 6 years, and she's never seen me without a beard. So it's not a good sight. I actually have a bum chin, which no one really knows about. So please cut that out of this episode. I don't want anyone to know. It ruins my reputation.
I don't cut anything out of these episodes.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to stop, because that's serious information.
my husband has like long scruff. Yep. And there was one Halloween when he shaved and I'd never seen him shave before. And he hasn't shaved since then. It was
horrifying.
Like, it was like, no, and he looks good too, but I was just like, whoa, whoa, that is not, yeah. He came in. My eyes were like this big. He's like, well, I'm not doing that again.
It's a different person. I remember someone told me last time I shaved because I was playing rugby league at the time and I dyed my, like, I dyed my beard pink for a breast cancer round we were having. We were raising money. So I bleached the entire beard. It was white or gray or whatever you want to call it, and dyed it pink and then shaved it off. And someone just came up to me who I barely knew. It was at the pub and he said, mate, you look absolutely awful without a beard. And I was like, all right, probably going to keep one. Fair enough. Thank you for your input.
Thank you. That's my face. Yep.
Yeah. This is what I was bored with, you bastard. Anyway, it's life.
That's life. Yeah. So the reason I invited you on, I'm just going to get into this right away. The reason I invited you on so quickly was because I came across a clip of you on an Instagram account from Toronto. And it was like, look how horrible this man is. This is his joke. And I was like, oh, so I listened to the joke and I'm actually going to put it in this video now.
Oh, God.
No, it's going up. It's going up.
This Australian extremist stormed this building, this mosque, this room where people were saying their prayers and going about their business. And for me, the saddest thing about that, it wasn't the 52 people who were killed. It wasn't the countless others who had their lives changed forever because their family members were taken from them. It was the hundreds of people that night who couldn't make it home from nightclubs in Christchurch because all the cabbies were dead.
So everyone in the video, so Eric, the guy who helps me out with my podcast, actually pointed this out and said, everyone in the video, they go, oh, and laugh, right? Because it is a dark joke.
It is, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I listened to it and I thought, like, holy shit, that is dark. But the crowd's response is an honest response. And yeah. Then you put it up online, and this happens, I guess, quite frequently with comedians, is you'll get one part of their show taken out and posted up on Twitter, and then you'll have people attack that part of the show, and then it'll just create a mob, and it'll just, like, go on from there. So that's kind of what happened to you, I think, in regards to that joke.
And as for this particular joke, and a lot of people pointed out how dark it was, when I wrote it, I just thought, oh, my God, I am the biggest piece of shit alive. That was my original reaction, because that's an honest truth. Like, it's a horrible joke. And this is what people kept saying to me. They kept saying, that's so offensive. That's horrible. That's mean. And my reaction was, I know the point of the bit. It is a horrible thing to say. It's a mean thing to say about the worst day in someone's life when they've lost a family member or whatever. And that's comedy. That's how we deal with horrible things. We joke about them. And I mean, as you saw with that clip, the entire crowd laughed and stopped to applaud, an applause break, something that all comedians endeavor to find throughout a show. And that happened at almost every show. And I'm not just saying that to make me sound good, at almost every show, including the show I did in Christchurch, the area in which that horrible atrocity where the Australian white supremacists went through and murdered 51 innocent people. They stopped, laughed, and applauded. And I am one of those people where when I talk to my mates, we all make horrible jokes, and I like to bring that onto the stage, you know, and it doesn't come from a place of hate. It's not hate speech. There's no intent to harm or hurt people or hinder anyone's life. It is generally just there for you to laugh and then move on from. And as you said, to your point, when someone takes that clip and then just puts it somewhere where no one expects it. You might be cooking dinner and flicking through Instagram and they say, oh, my God, this horrible comedian. And then you watch it and then you go, oh, my God, this bloke's the worst bloke of the world. This is the new Hitler. This is awful. And And I get that. I understand that. But if you are there, you enter the contract when you walk inside the show of this guy's going to say whatever he wants to say to make you laugh. That is the area, that is the arena that you're walking into. And people have said to me, Michaela, they go, you can't punch down in comedy. That's such bullshit. I will punch anywhere. I will just throw haymakers. If I make you laugh, then I have earned my money for the evening. You know, that is what you are paid for. That is why you are there. You are there to laugh at whatever it happens to be.
How do you come up with these things? You just like sit there and think?
So, yeah, I mean, it's like anything. It's like any writer. The War of Art is a great book to sort of get people around how any creative thinker works. I mean, to sit there and write, whether it's about, you know, if you're thinking comically or whether you're writing a dissertation or a PhD or whatever, you are just writing. You are trying to access memories, thoughts, ideas in your mind, and then, okay, they become physical. They become part of your paper or whatever you're writing. And that's what I do. I mean, I think of – I usually work backwards. I think of a punchline and then create a joke around it. Mm. And that's something I've always sort of done. I mean, I think of things when I'm in the car or when I'm at the gym or whatever, and I text myself the punchline or the joke or the idea or the thought, and then I work around that when I get home and I sit down and I have a whiskey and I write.
So you have no limits for joke making. Do you think there should be limits for joke making?
No, none, zero. It's up to the crowd. If they laugh, it's funny. If I tell a joke and it bombs terribly, awful, and it's a mean joke, then I don't do it again because I know it's not funny. People keep saying, oh, it's not funny. Bullshit. They laughed. Therefore, funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
that,
you know, like, it's, I mean, I get where people are coming from, but my mind works differently. I'm a comedian. This is how I work. I don't, you know, I don't curtail to certain sensibilities. And where do you stop? Like, if you offend 100 people out of 100 people, okay, should you not say that? But what if you offend 50 people out of that 100 or 20 or 1? Where do you stop? Where is the line? Do you draw it? Where do you draw it? That's the, I guess that's the question that I've been pondering. And my answer to that is you don't draw a line. If people laugh, then you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is, like, how... life is so shitty sometimes, like a lot of the time. It's really terrible. And how can you survive that kind of, how can you survive life without poking fun at it? Like at a certain, I know the way I got through having an autoimmune disorder was there were times when days were so awful that I was like, okay, this has crossed into the funny zone. I said, when it's so bad, it's funny.
It's comical. Like,
yeah.
Like, so, what do you do if I remember our conversation, we were talking about the enormous journey that your father went on when he was, you know, in a coma and covered in so much medication just to help him get through a certain situation. Like, what do you do there? Do you walk in with an extremely sad face, or do you, when he wakes up, do you try and crack a joke? That's the first thing that people try and do, because it's the only way to deal with shit. And life is in many ways a tragedy, and it's a horrible situation for a lot of people. You know, after that bit that I did that we just played, I did a 10-minute bit on my autistic brother. One of the hardest situations that my family has been through is to deal with, you know, raising him and giving him a good life. But we make fun of it because it's the only way we know how to do it. And people say, oh, you can only make fun of certain situations that affect you. I think that's rubbish. I think make fun of situations because we've all had to deal with them. That situation that happened in New Zealand was so horrible. It affected everyone. I felt sick when I watched that footage. And I think it's ours to make fun of as a human race.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. Like I said, I wouldn't have been able to like go through the health problems I've gone through or survive this year. I mean, I think it's funny. Yeah. I got coronavirus. That's funny. Like, so
it is pretty funny. I mean, when I read this afternoon that you and your father had coronavirus, I was like, oh my fucking God, these bald people, leave them alone.
I know. I didn't believe it. Like the doctor was like, it's coronavirus. I was like, nah. I mean, it would make sense with the plot line that is 2020, but like, no, it's not coronavirus. And it was like 15 days later that all the tests came back positive, and I was like, wow.
Wow.
That's funny. That's kind of funny. I hope I don't die, because that would make the old YouTube video look really bad.
But that's a joke that people could make. And would you be mad at people for doing that? No, because it's obvious. You know, that's where the humor lies. But yeah, it's been an interesting week. I tell you that. So the special was released on my birthday, 14th of July. Go me. 27. I know I look much younger. And we put it out there, and someone, 3 weeks later, this past Sunday, I think it was the 3rd or 2nd of August, they just posted it on Twitter. They cut that section. They infringed on my copyright, by the way. It was behind a paywall. How dare they? And it just went super viral. It just went mad. I saw it on the Sunday and I was like, oh, this isn't great. And then the Monday, I was like, oh, my God, my life is over. So I sent you, and feel free to put them up if you still have them, the graphic from my Instagram on the Monday and the Tuesday. And it was like 300,000 people went to my Instagram on the Monday, and another 290,000 went on the Tuesday. And I didn't even get an extra 1,000 followers. This was all hate. This was all anger. This was crankiness. This bloke is the worst person alive. I went through and deleted all the DMs, and it only lets you delete like 100 or whatever at a time. I went through so many times. I think I must have had it at the very minimum 45,000 DMs from angry people, like just hate, the most vile shit. And I mean, the one thing that really got to me was how, I've made a lot of videos on misogyny and shit, and sort of tried to break down feminist myths and all that type of stuff. But the misogynist stuff that I got, like your daughter deserves to be raped, your mother, all this attack on women, it just seems such a strange way to deal with anger for these guys. But anyway, it was full on. It was stressful. But I knew, I learned this from the comedian Joey Diaz, that the best way to deal with cancel culture is to take it head on and admit to people why you did it. Why did I do that? To make people laugh. Was it funny? Yes. Is it horrible? Absolutely. Is it offensive? Yes. But to hide from it, and I refuse to apologize for it. People were saying, you need to apologize, just make a quick video just saying, listen, I'm sorry. No, that's not how we stop cancel culture. Cancel culture is only and continuously just, it's bursting forward into the world that is entertainment, that is Twitter, that is social media, and no one is putting a stop to it, and people need to. And whether it is affecting you personally or someone around you, you need to go out there and say, no, this is not how you deal with these situations. If you don't find Isaac Butterfield funny, if you think he's a horrible person, don't watch me, which obviously is impossible because I'm amazing and humble as shit. But I watch this just fall around me and just think, I was just thinking to myself, like, come on. Like, guys, this is a joke. I know this is a tough subject for a lot of people, but surely this isn't something to invest your entire life into, to breaking me down and trying to ruin my career. Thankfully, I'm my own boss, so I'm not going to fire me. But there's other people out there that don't have that luxury.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Did you see that Ryan Reynolds just apologized for having his wedding on a former plantation?
Like, in every place in the world, there is, you know, there's something in the closet. There's something horrible going on. You can't just run around walking on eggshells. And I feel like everyone that's locked down at the moment, I know that a lot of people in the States and in Australia and everywhere in the world really are locked down. They're still in their houses. They're finding they need something to do. And I was really of the opinion that the coronavirus was going to turn this whole progressive woke culture around. I really thought, we'd all come together and we'd all just be like, okay. It looked
like that for a little bit.
Didn't it? And then it just went just fast the other way. And no one's together. Everyone's divisive. Everyone hates everyone. And if you're not on the woke team, you're the enemy. And if you're on the woke team, guess what? You're not woke enough. You need to apologize for this and that. And I don't see where it ends. I can't see where it ends. And that's worrying to a lot of people. Not so much to me. I can poke fun at it, but a lot of people, they're in a weird spot right now.
Yeah. How did you handle that much negative? I mean, that's a lot, like 45,000 DMs. Like if I get gone after on Twitter for something, or it's only really happened for vegans with followings that they've sent all their minions to attack me. That's pretty wearing. Like, it's a good like 3 or 4 days of a lot of negativity, but 45,000 DMs, like you got it way worse. How do you handle that mentally? Like, it's got to hurt a little bit.
No, I mean, I have issues with, I'm very woke within my youthfulness. I've got issues with anxiety and stuff, and this didn't help. But it's one of those things where I've learned to deal with it. I too have made anti-vegan videos. I have anti-vegan merch. We just sold out of 500 hoodies in a day. Like, of just people that just hate vegans. It's hilarious, particularly in Australia. Big following of anti-vegan people. It's wonderful. And they are vicious. For people who love life, they hate me. And, it's sort of fun. But when it comes to things like religion, that's when it becomes really serious. People saying, I know where you live. I'm going to come for you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your family. The whole rape your daughter thing. I don't even have a daughter. But, man, I must have got 400 or 500 people saying that exact line. And it is weird. What a strange and horrible threat to send to someone who you don't know. I don't want to curse on your show. I know you guys are very above board, but it's just effing horrible to send that to another human being. But I think the way you deal with it is you just don't read your DMs. Like, I would just scroll through, and just to get to the bottom to press delete all. Like, I don't read them. Like, it's like the comments were there. I was reading some of the comments, but that was just to make a video about them. You know, you put something out there, you're going to have so many people comment and say, this, you're a horrible person, you're this, you're that. And if you take that on board, then you become that person. You become, aggressive, or you become upset or sad or anxious, or you can't look at your phone. And I think that's a lesson that a lot of people need to learn about social media is, especially when you have a large audience, people will come after you, and they will come after you nonstop. And that's scary, but they're not there. It's not a crowded room. You're not in any physical danger. You just have to look at it, assess the situation, and find the best way to respond. And the way I responded was with a video saying that I stand by what I said because it's a joke. And then just with countless memes that people send me, I just kept posting memes, and that shut everyone up because there was this massive jump in numbers, like we said before, and then it was went back to normal. 2 days, 3 days later, when they find something else to be outraged about, like Ryan Reynolds. It just that's how it works. They just move on, and they find someone else to bitch about, whinge about, and moan about. And then that person who got hit with the outrage train the week before just goes, whew, thank Christ that's over.
Yeah, if you don't apologize. Like, that is a really good rule, because if you apologize, then you're admitting you did something wrong, and then you never get forgiven. So it's not one of those things you learned when you were little where apology actually means you're forgiven. It's completely the opposite with cancel culture. It's absurd.
Agreed. And it's one of the big points for me was I'm a comedian. I'm not a public official. I'm not a politician. I'm not someone who heads up a big brand. I'm not coming out and saying these as statements. I'm coming out there and saying these as jokes. Now, if you think that joke is something that your racist Uncle Fred would say and you don't want to deal with it, then that's fine. If you enjoy that stuff, then go for it. Enjoy it. But freaking out and having this mad panic and retweeting everything and carrying on, I just don't think it's the way that a rational person operates. And that's been my experience dealing with unrational people rather.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the way someone would operate in real life, like outside of a computer. Do you think
everyone's
those people...
like, I had a 16-year-old boy who would have been 4 foot nothing say he's going to fire me and bash me. Michaela, I'm 6'8" with a beard. I'm going to step on that tiny child, but on the internet, he may as well be Andre the Giant. And that's how people act, and it's sort of fun when you look at it like that. It's always good to check out someone else's account when they talk shit about you.
I haven't heard any of your backstory about how you got started. I know you said you started just creating videos just where you are and then branching out, but like, why? What happened? How old were you?
Well, it was strange. I always wanted to be a comedian since I was probably about, 9, 10 years old. I used to watch, Billy Connolly quite a bit and really enjoyed his stand up and watch his old tapes with my pop. And I started to, when I was, I might have been 10 or 11, I started hosting like the talent shows at school and things like that. And then further on from that, I was doing debating teams and things like that. And just went from there, really. And then I got to the age of, let's say, 21. And I was diagnosed with this weird form of epilepsy. And what happens is basically I lose control of my head. And my head gets stuck like that for about 10 seconds. And I go blind in this eye. I can still talk. I still remain conscious the entire time. And it was just really weird. It was very strange. No one really knew what it was. So I went to the doctor on my 21st birthday and I described my symptoms to him. And he said, I don't really know, but it could be this. And I said, what's that disease? And he said, the people who are stuck in wheelchairs that can't move. And he made that action. So on my 21st birthday, I find this out. And I'm just like, oh, my God, what, this is crazy. And I didn't know where to go from there. I was basically stuck in the crosshairs of death in my mind. I thought, well, if I'm in a wheelchair, then I may as well maybe dead. And that's obviously not, there's a lot of people who live very, very fruitful lives in wheelchairs, and I'm not taking anything away from that for a second. But for a young 21-year-old who played sport and played rugby league and all this type of stuff, who was very much enjoying physical activity, I was going out and carving up dance floors at nightclubs, having a good old time. And to hear that is a very, very strange thing. So I had that news. And went home and had some Chinese food delivered, and it was a big party at my house for my birthday. And I sort of sat there silently, just like pondering life, so to speak. And at 21 years old, you don't know shit about anything, and you just sort of think, okay, well, if my life's going to be over, I need to really start doing things and start moving forward. And to that point, I'd been writing stand up and been planning to do stand up and wanted to do stand up. And then I thought, well, I need to do it now or I won't have a chance to ever do it. And I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks later, I did my first open mic set, 5 minutes, and did okay. And then got back the next week, maybe didn't do as well, went back the next week, so on and so forth. And it was probably the first thing that I ever really did in my life that I was actually really good at. Because I'd done things, I've always been good at certain things, like okay at stuff, but never really thing. And stand-up is something that I really think I'm quite good at. And it was a weird, or a strange avenue to explore, because people just go, what do you mean you're doing stand-up? You're not funny. You're not that funny. You're just some dude. You're just some tall, weird-looking dude. And I was like, no, well, I write the jokes. I do this. And then I just kept going and moving forward and finding the best way to continue to grow an audience. And that moved on to YouTube and to podcasts and to all those avenues that we're lucky enough to have in our time. But, as a kid, I was just the funny dude. I was an overweight kid, so I had to make jokes to have friends and talk to girls. Otherwise, I had no chance, So I think that was a lucky thing that people talk negatively about childhood obesity. But if I wasn't a fat fuck, hey, what can I say? My story's not something outrageous or anything like that, but it was good to have these backward steps too. Like I through the epilepsy, I developed panic attacks and PTSD from having them in public places. Yeah. And I had my entire first tour, like 50 shows or whatever it was, having continuous panic attacks on stage, just nonstop, just anxiety, just high level shit. And I was just in constant fear, but I got it done. And that proved to me that no matter what the circumstance, I can do my show, I can do it well, and I can keep everyone happy in the crowd, regardless of what's going on upstairs or what's happening anywhere else in the room. I can still make it happen. And that was probably the most important lesson I've ever had. You know, having a mental health problem, which I have, and I'm happy to admit that. I mean, a lot of people say, no, it's not that, you know, I don't have a mental health problem. It is. It's an illness like any other. And I'm happy enough to admit that because it gave me the best perspective on life. When I have a really good day, it's a really good day, you know, and it really, you really see the brightness of everything around you. When you're feeling good, when you're getting things done, when you're achieving goals. And, you know, I'm not by any means where I was. I was in a bad way for maybe a year or 2 years, and I'm much, much better now, thankfully, through a lot of different things. But, you know, did I enjoy that period? Not at all. But would I change it? No way. It's made me a much better person. It's made me a kinder person. And I think I understand the world a little bit better because of that.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I don't think I've experienced anything as horrible as things that affect you mentally, particularly panic, but like panic, depression, anxiety. And I had like joints replaced, and I would easily take that over the mental stuff. There's like, you can turn your entire world into a hell just from like switches in your brain. It's insane. So that sounds very unpleasant. I liked.
Yeah, it was. It was very unpleasant.
Yeah. Was. Yeah. You said.
Yeah,
you said,
you're right. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Oh, that's okay. You're in Australia. I'm in Serbia. There's a bit of a delay. We're managing it though. And the internet hasn't cut out too many times. You said you went in to talk to your doctor and he told you something about ending up in a wheelchair. Like I had a, and it wasn't quite as dramatic. Well, I've had some dramatic parts, but I had a doctor, because of the arthritis in my hands, my thumbs started to like grow at weird angles. And I went in and I was like, this is what's up with this. And he goes, oh, don't worry, it's bone deformities. And I was like, I'm worried. That doesn't make me feel better. Thank you, though, like putting a name on it. Just don't worry.
You're just deformed. Don't worry about it. It's your fault. Get out of here with your problems. What do you think? I'm some type of doctor or something. Yeah. But this dude, and I still respect this doctor, but he came out and he freaked me out. Oh. And but maybe that's a good thing. You know, I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't hear that. I mean, it's how you react to shit, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Or people who just go through those things, twist them around in their head so they can cope forever.
Mm. And
which
also,
is fine too.
Yeah. And to that point, like you can hear some bad news like that and shut down and never escape. Mm-hmm. And that's even worse. And I could have easily have done that, you know?
Yeah, that's why you have to poke fun at things, right?
And, you know, that's the thing. If I don't poke fun at things like that, like, you know, simple things like on stage when I talk about it, I used to talk about it on stage so that I felt less scared of it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be like, hey, you know, this lighting guy, if you've got a strobe light, please refrain from using that. And that was just a little easy, little off the cuff sort of thing to make people go, oh, okay, you know, this is a thing. Although one lighting guy in Townsville in far north Queensland, he actually hit the strobe light and I nearly died. But anyway, other than that, no, I was fine. I survived somehow. But it's one of those things that you have to make fun of the dark shit just to try and make it all that lighter. And I think that's something that I've learned this week. And I mean, one of the questions that I've been sort of throwing around in my mind this week is where do I go from here? Do I, with my stand-up, do I double down? Do I keep talking? And not necessarily about that particular religion or those particular people from those particular countries. Do I just double down and just go hard out? I think I will. I think I have to, because I feel like I'm almost proving a point to people that you can laugh at horrible things and it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you believe those things. Just because you make a joke about something doesn't mean you're going to get it tattooed on your back as the one thing you believe in this world. I think you should be able to joke about absolutely everything, and I think I will continue to do that.
Yeah, well, it's weird how the times have changed things, because I remember, I don't know if this is a good example, but I can remember being in like grade two or three, and there's a whole bunch of horrible jokes going around, and there were Holocaust jokes. Like, and I don't think this was particular to my school. I think that's just something people my age joked about. And I remember kind of being uncomfortable by it, but like kids who said those jokes didn't just get destroyed forever. Like, people knew they were jokes, right? They're like, just because you're saying that A doesn't make what you're joking about okay. Like that. So it's strange how much we've changed, because the joke you made, it's not the darkest joke I've ever heard. Like, it's not. It's dark, but it's not the darkest joke I've heard. And people have, well, I guess it's weird too with social media. People have access to you. And that was never the case. Like, what are you going to do? Get 45,000 angry letters? Like, most of those people don't care enough to actually send a letter. And I figure those people, like, talking about, I hope your daughter gets raped. Do you think that's something they've said to multiple people, given the fact that you don't have a daughter? Like, is that just something they throw out?
It has to be. You can't just all of a sudden say that. It's not something that someone just off the cuff goes, I'm so angry. Oh, I hope your daughter gets raped. Like, that's not something that happens. Surely.
Yeah. You'd hope anyway.
I fucking hope so. It's just strange. It's strange how men always bring it back to women too. And I was really taken back by that. I think that's one thing I learned from that is when some dudes are angry, maybe it just goes to show intelligence. Rather than coming back and arguing a point, you just go with the most heinous thing possible that you can say. And maybe that's something that they should work on within themselves. But also, you're not going to change people. If you want to be a horrible person and say something like that, whatever. Whatever, dickhead. Like, that's just get away from me, you big freak. Like, whatever. It's strange how people have access to you nonstop and they think that you care what they think. Like, I just, you know, I know what the people around me think, and I know if I've overstepped the mark, and I'll learn from that. But people, when they take things out of context and they have to cancel you and they go after sponsors, like contacting my sponsors and going, do you stand by these claims? And like, of course they don't stand by those claims. They've got nothing to do with it. They're selling bloody VPNs. They don't give a shit. Like why? Why would they care? And I guess I know why they have to go out and say, listen, we don't stand by these claims. They've got to stand by the company line, and
well,
that's fair.
No, I don't agree with that.
Thank you. That's so cowardly.
I don't.
I know.
Jesus, all these people are like, oh, no, that guy said something rude and I don't agree with that. Like, screw off.
100%.
Nobody cares. Well, people do care, apparently, but they shouldn't. And it's like, is that, you think that makes you look better? Anyway, I don't.
There's this guy who owns a beef jerky company in Australia, Beef Chief, original Beef Chief. Here's the shout out, because he got messages about how bad I was, and he told them to, I'm sorry to use this word again, but he told them to fuck off. He said he loves Isaac. And I was like, yes, that's what we want. Someone who sticks by, like, you know, if you're going to sponsor a comedian, what do you expect? Something's going to happen.
Yeah. Or they're not going to be funny, that, or something's going to happen, or they're just not funny. So have you looked into diet? I have to bring this up because I do this all beef diet. Have you looked into diet for the epilepsy?
So the first thing I did was I went on a keto diet, and I went on a keto diet for 2.5 years and dropped about 35, 36 kilos, which off the top of my head, I don't know how many pounds that is. I think it's like maybe 80, 90 pounds or something crazy.
It's a lot.
It was a lot. And so I ended up at 94 kilos and I was 203 centimeters tall, 6'8". I was probably a little bit too skinny, but I went for it and it stopped. It stopped the seizures. It was great. And I'm on medication now. And the only reason I went on it was because I was on the road. And I think we talked about this last time. It's so hard to stick to a strict diet when you're on the road, particularly when you're doing shows at nighttime. Like, the only thing that's open is fast food. That's it. And Unless you're going to go to McDonald's and eat just burger patties, which I do because I have to, it's tough. So, you know, I went off it for a little while, but I'm back on it now. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I went on the all meat diet for about 2.5-3 weeks and stopped because I just steaks, just so many steaks. I was 97% steak, and I was just like, I can't do it. but it's not something out of the realm of possibility I would revisit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not like you don't only eat one thing because it's the best, it's the most fun diet ever.
Yeah.
People who it helps get really like, this is great. And I think it's great too, to be fair, but that's because I was like half dead without it. If I wasn't half dead without it, I probably wouldn't be all for it.
So what do you prefer? Do you prefer some mouth pleasure of some French fries or chips or whatever, or do you prefer to get out of bed every morning?
Yeah.
You know, I guess you got to weigh that up. And that makes complete sense. I get that. And it was the same with the keto diet. I told everyone to get on that because I felt better on it and I lost weight on it and I couldn't lose weight on anything because I didn't understand how carbs interact with your blood sugar. I didn't know that shit. No one teaches you that at school. So I think I'll probably eat in a similar fashion probably for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Just veggies and good meat. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good. What was I going to ask? Oh, yeah. When you went off the keto diet for that period of time, did your symptoms worsen?
So I went off it for maybe a couple of weeks and then I started having them again. And I had a couple in public and that sort of worsened the traumatic stress issues with it. Mm-hmm. And that was a shame. But, you know, what do you do? The game that I played sporting wise was I'll call it rugby. It's not rugby, it's very different, it's rugby league, but anyway, rugby. And so there's a lot of head movement, you know, people coming together and brains moving around, and that would make the seizures happen more often than not just because of the quick movement and the change of eye direction or whatever. So I'd have them on the field, and that was one of the reasons that I went off it, was to have to feel better as far as explosive energy is concerned, because I felt like I lacked that a little bit when I was on the keto diet, and I still do. I train in an MMA gym, and I feel like when I'm hitting pads and kicking pads and stuff, I do struggle when I don't have carbs in my system, but I feel a lot better with the keto diet, so I continue with it. But as far as longer form cardio, I feel much better when I'm on a keto diet. So I guess it's different for everyone. But when I went off it, I went off it. I was eating everything. I put so much weight on because I was on the road. I was having a great time. You know, I was on tour. You know, I was eating. And what my tour manager, Zach, he doesn't have a very good diet at all. One of my fondest memories of him is him in his underpants with his big old belly walking around with some McDonald's and falling over and falling on his big ice cream and it just going everywhere in the hotel room. It was marvelous. It was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. And, you know, I wouldn't have those memories without just taking some time off the diet. So if it doesn't affect you too greatly going off it, I think it's a good thing. Everything in moderation, including moderation, I guess.
For the energy, if you're having energy problems on a keto diet, is your salt intake ridiculously high? Like you might need like 10 grams a day.
It's up there. It's everything's extremely salted. Like people see me salt meat and they're like, are you okay? Like,
salt meat in Australia? No.
I mean salting salt. Okay, I mean like I'm trying to store it in a ship as it goes overseas salt. I'm trying to not let it rotten. But I could always increase it, I guess. The same with potassium, and I take, you know, magnesium supplements and things like that. So I am always keeping an eye on things like that. But I mean, the salt one's always a strange one for people to deal with, I think. They see that and they freak out, like, hey, you're having this much salt, like it's going to raise your blood pressure and all that type of stuff. And it's always an argument to have with people, like, I know one of my mates who was a nurse, he said, yeah, it raises your blood pressure, but only for a couple of minutes while, or, you know, a half an hour after you have it. It doesn't do it forever. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. That was his knowledge from his, I don't know, 1 week of dietary education in university. So I'm not too sure. But to your point, I think absolutely I could probably increase my salt intake, and that's probably something I should be doing. Do you do it as far as a supplement, or is it just in water?
Yeah, I add it to water. So I probably consume 5 grams more salt than just salting my meat, and I put like a pile of salt on there. And it looks like people on ketogenic or low carb diet, they secrete a lot more sodium. And so a lot of the problems people have when they go on ketogenic diets, especially with energy, is some sort of electrolyte is off, and generally it's sodium, and you're big, so you probably need a lot. You could at least test that to see if it helps with energy, because like I said, a lot of people, some people lose hair when they do a ketogenic diet. And usually that's a sodium problem too. You look good on that.
What are you saying? What are you saying?
You look totally fine on that end.
The career's gone. I know I am actually balding. It's very sad. My Lebanese barber, he said to me, Isaac, that's not a very good Lebanese accent. I'm probably getting it done for racism again. Isaac, your hair is receding and your beard is going gray. What is happening in your life? So
you're like 45,000 DMs.
I was like, yeah, what do you think? I've just been harassed by everyone. I don't know, bald, good on me. I've got a big beard, I'll be right. I'll just comb it over.
Okay, where can people find you online? I think you said at the beginning, but reiterate.
If you go to YouTube and you type in ISAAC Butterfield, I will be there and I'll be waiting for you. You better come and find me, you bastards.
Yeah. You're pretty funny. You're pretty funny.
Yeah, I have my moments. When I get over to wherever you happen to be in the world at the time, I'll make sure you come along to a show and see if I can out-dark myself, because I think that's the way it may have to go.
Oh, my God. Good luck.
I don't mean that in a way like blackface. I mean like joke-wise. I'm not going to – anyway, let's see. I'll see if I need to get cancelled again, and then I may break out the blackface. But potentially, no. Yeah. I don't think I should do that.
I don't. Maybe not quite. Maybe a bad That's move. Assuming you're ever going to be able to tour again. Can you even get into Australia right now if you're not from Australia?
No, I don't think so. Unless you're there on a particular working visa, maybe. Like if you have to be there, like your company depends on you coming there, but you certainly have to be there and go straight to a hotel and do 14 days or 15 days isolation. Even in between states at the moment, you have to do isolation. So if you go from Victoria to New South Wales, you have to go straight to a hotel, I think, as far as flying is concerned. If you're driving, you probably get a direction from the police and the army, which are on every border at the moment. It's pretty crazy.
Wow.
And a lot of people are, a lot of people are really upset with the mask laws that have come into Victoria right now. You have to wear a mask. You can only leave the house for 1 hour of activity, 1 hour of exercise, and only one person from your house can go out and do groceries. So down there, it's pretty full on.
Yeah, that's intense. That's way more intense than North America at the moment. Not that I'm there. Certainly more intense than Belgrade, but... I really think most people here actually got it. I don't know. I don't want to go back and wear masks. I feel like if you've had it already, you shouldn't have to again. But we'll see how that works. So if you end up touring in the next 2 years, I'll come to a show.
Thank you. I wondered this today with the vaccine. If they do come out with the vaccine anytime soon, let's say we want to go to my show or a sporting event. Do you have to show your papers that you've had the vaccine?
I have no idea. Do you have to get the vaccine if you've already had the virus?
Do you have to get the vaccine to go back to work? Do you have to get, like, you know, this is, If you're an anti-vaxxer out there, this is like peak, you know, mind explosion mode. You're like, they've got us. They've got the microchips, which, you know, whatever. Good on you. All the power to you, sister. But, yeah, it's greatly concerning. But also, everyone else has got other shit going on, so take every day as you can and or as you do, and hope that smarter people in the world, the scientists, figure this out so we can all go back to going to see an Isaac Butterfield live and on stage. It's a marvelous time for everybody. Bring your family, bring the kids, bring the trailer. It'll be great.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming on. That was fun.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me. It was lovely to talk again.